Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. A new report's come out connecting red hair to Neanderthals, which explains a lot. I realized I've been called a lot of things over the last few years that I've been in radio, one of which is a Neanderthal. Of course, that's because I'm not a progressive. As you know, the progressives are really regressives, taking us back to Marxism. It's been tried before, but as you well know, most progressives don't realize that they're going backwards, not forwards, which is why they're regressives as opposed to real progressives. But the report says that red hair is connected to Neanderthals, which is interesting. And the reason I'm interested in this particular topic is that I've lost the use of my left hand's opposing thumb for the last month. I can't lift weights. You cannot imagine how hard it is to open a car door without an opposing thumb. You can't drive a screwdriver without an opposing thumb. Now, of all of the hominids, man is one of the few with an opposing thumb, and it's been said by evolutionary biologists that it's the opposing thumb that permitted us to use tools and to make the advances to the extent that we have. And you try to live without a thumb for a day, and you'll see what I'm talking about. So I can't lift weights, and it's crazy, a great adjustment because everything starts to go wrong with your body. Of course, there are some other things I've been thinking about. Luckily, I'm a righty. Not a lefty, and it's the left opposing thumb that I've lost the use of, and I hope it's temporary. I think I ripped it. Now, that's neither here nor there. I understand that. But I can give you the news, which I'm going to do in a moment, which is that the second arson suspect, I believe I was amongst the first, if not the first, to point out that it was arson that accounted for a good number of the fires, not a lack of National Guard equipment, as the liar Barbara Boxer and the moron State Insurance Commissioner Garibaldi has been going around saying. I mean, it's amazing to me that our insurance commissioner, Garibaldi, and Barbara the Bagel Boxer, the liar whose old hot pants are on fire, is going around with the big lie that the fires raged out of control because the National Guard's equipment is in Iraq. She should be arrested for... You know why she should be arrested? Not because she's a liar. That's a given. This woman was born with a lie in her mouth when she came out of the cradle in Brooklyn. That's a given. No, not that she's a liar. But she's telling our enemies around the world that we actually don't have National Guard in America, that lying rat, that lying street rat. I can't stand it anymore. The fact of the matter is we have 17,000 National Guardsmen ready to go here in California, and none of the equipment that we need is in Iraq. None of it. They had equipment sitting on the runway that they couldn't use because no one could fly those planes into those fires, into 80-mile-an-hour winds. But she wouldn't know that, the bagel. They get away with murder with this. Now, I'll tell you why we had these fires. Because one of those arrested setting the fires is a Guatemalan illegal immigrant. 41-year-old Catalino Pineda started a fire on a San Fernando Valley hillside and then walked away. They caught him. Witnesses caught this illegal piece of crap. And they followed this illegal piece of garbage to a nearby restaurant where police arrested him. Pineda is a Guatemalan native. He booked for investigation of arson. They should hang him. They should hang him. What do you mean booked for investigation? Everyone saw him doing it. So don't tell me there's no arson. One is dead who tried to run the police over when they caught him. Another one was captured. Now they caught an illegal alien. We have a real problem on our hands here. We have an invading army, many of whom don't come here to work. They come here to conduct drug deals, rape, murder, pillage, drive drunk, and set forest fires. And Boxer the liar has the nerve to say it's because of our equipment in Iraq. And, of course, then we have the insurance commissioner, Garibaldi, lying about it as well. Listen to clip 26. The lieutenant general of the National Guard shows you that Barbara Boxer is a liar whose hot old pants are on fire. Listen.
The problem with fighting this fire has nothing to do with shortages of personnel, equipment, or capability from the National Guard. And I want to make that absolutely clear, because there's others that are saying things that are just not supported by fact.
Yeah, Boxer owes the American people an apology, and she ought to be thrown out of the Senate and open up a brassiere store in Flushing, New York, where she belonged all her life. That's the most she's capable of, is running a brassiere store on Union Turnpike. How they get away with this? Audiences reject Iraq war at box office. Now, this is an important story. The reason it's an important story is because many of you are being brainwashed into believing most Americans are against the war, and that it's a shoo-in for Hillary Clinton and the anti-war hot old pants wearers to win. The fact of the matter is, the movies are pretty telling as to what the general public is going to respond to. And this article has come out and said that it doesn't matter how many Oscar winners are in front of or behind the camera. Audiences are proving to be conscientious objectors when it comes to this fall surge of anti-war and anti-Bush films. And then they quote two of these dogs, and both drew minuscule crowds upon their release. You hear this? What this tells you is that all the polls are lies, which we know. I've never been polled. You've never been polled. The polls are invented by pollsters who are trying to sell you a bill of goods. Number two, the Democrat Party and the media are one and the same. The media to the 95th percentile is an arm of the Democrat National Committee. They want you to believe that Hillary Clinton's anti-war positions are that of the mainstream of America. I got news for you. There's going to be an earthquake in the other direction in the election if Giuliani can finally get his story straight and stick to one story and stick to one team. So it's the Republicans' war to lose, by the way. But the point here is, irrespective of the prognostications of who is going to election to lose, not war. Fact of the matter is that the audiences are rejecting Iraq war movies because they're all anti-war, anti-American. If they put out an Iraq war movie that showed the heroism of our troops and the sacrifices they're making and the families that are sacrificing for our troops, we'd all flock to the movie theater, wouldn't we? It would be like World War II. But because we have communist scum in Hollywood, communist scum of the lowest order, McCarthy was 100% right, and little did we know that the grandchildren of those vermin would come to haunt us 50 years later. Senator McCarthy was 1,000% right. Not only were there communists in Hollywood, but right now they have metastasized into virtually 95% of Hollywood. We have red diaper doper baby rats, mainly from West L.A. and Hollywood, in Hollywood, and from Brooklyn, New York, who are polluting America with their vile anti-American, anti-war, anti-family, anti-police, anti-military crap. And I don't care how many times the Scientologist Tom Cruise is put into a movie, or that overrated hack Tommy Lee Jones, or that horrendously fat Charlize Theron, or that anti-American piece of guava on the forest floor, that used up piece of fruit, Susan Sarandon. I don't care how many of these things they put into the movies. They're all bombing. Nobody wants to listen to this crap. One of the anti-war movies grossed only $1.4 million. It's on the way immediately. It's on the way immediately to the DVD box next Tuesday. And the fact of the matter is, they're nothing but propaganda, and they're not even pro-American propaganda. They're anti-American propaganda. They could have been made with Osama bin Laden's money. Now, Hollywood anti-war movies are not stopping there, of course. The drive continues November 9th with a new movie coming out in which Tom Scientology Cruise, Meryl Sourpuss Streep, and Robert Weirdo Redford sit and talk in living rooms about their anti-war positions. This movie is slated for the DVD slot probably within 4 days. I don't care how many of these so-called stars are in it. Their stars have fallen a long time ago, which is why they're still doing anti-war movies. It's all they can get. If they only did a movie showing the heroism of our troops, the sacrifices of our troops, the sacrifices of the National Guard families and the others, the sacrifices of our Marines, the persecution of our Marines by the five-star generals and the president himself, I can guarantee you that movie would make at least $100 million, if not more, probably within the first month. So there it is. What I'm saying by this is that the audiences are not stupid. They're rejecting the Iraq war because they're anti-war movies. It is not boding well for Hillary Clinton and her anti-war message, nor the Democrat Party. This tells me more than all of the Zoghbi polls that may be put out from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, all the way to Newark, New Jersey. I'll be right back. Savage. Well, now we go to the incendiary topic of racism and race, and that is a very important story in our country since we have race mongers like Al Sharpton out there stirring the pot and screaming race in a crowded nation. DNA pioneer Watson has been forced to quit the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory, of which he was the chairman, over some controversial remarks that he made. Now, here are the questions for you on Dr. Watson, which is, do you want to live in a country like this? Is this the kind of country you want to live in, where if you make a controversial remark, you lose your job? Now, Mr. Watson said he will quit as chancellor of Cold Spring Harbor Lab following an outcry by losers over the DNA pioneer's controversial remarks made to a British newspaper about the intelligence levels of Africans. So now he is retiring. They forced him out of a job. And he won the Nobel Prize in 1962 for co-discovering the structure of DNA. We understand the whole story. We understand there was another person involved, but he was an altogether brilliant scientist. And I may or may not agree with his analysis of African intelligence. However, on the face of it, he was fired simply for proposing an idea. Now, is this the nation you think your ancestors died for, to permit race mongers and race haters to fire people for statements that they make? Is this the America that you think you're living in? And how do you know it's not going to be you tomorrow on the job? You may sit there smugly as a so-called progressive thinking you're immune, but tomorrow it could be you thrown out of work for not being progressive enough. Don't you understand what I'm saying to you? Of course not. If you understood what I was saying to you, you wouldn't be a progressive. You wouldn't be involved with those retrograde Neanderthals. Trust me on that one. Now, we looked, how do you judge whether there is any veracity to what he said, that Africans are not as intelligent as others in general? He said in general. Well, what are the standards to judge this by? One of them might be Nobel Prizes in the sciences and in medicine. Because Nobel Prizes in the social sciences of the type that Al Gore has won have no meaning whatsoever. I mean, you could give a Nobel Prize in agitation and give it to Al Sharpton, for example, and call him a Nobel Prize winner. Or you give a Nobel Prize in terrorism and you give one to Yasser Arafat, as they have. Or you can give a Nobel Prize for turning people against the United States of America and the West in general and give it to Jimmy Carter, as they have. So those Nobel Prizes have no meaning. In medicine and in the hard sciences, they do have meaning. And then, therefore, you might evaluate national intelligence based upon the number of Nobel Prizes in the hard sciences and in medicine. Yes or no? Well, sure you can. So now we know that America wins the majority of Nobel Prizes. We know that Japan wins some. We know that they're dispersed pretty well in some of the other nations. But rarely, if ever, did we see a Nobel Prize in medicine or in the hard sciences in Africa. So the first conclusion you will come to if you're a brainwashed progressive liberal is that that's because Africa has been under the yoke of white colonialists for a very long period of time. Well, let's look at that. So is India. How do you explain the fact that India was also under British colonial rule until quite recently, by the way, and yet India produces Nobel scientists? Also, how do you explain the fact, if you want to use the race card, which is a fallacious card to use in this case, that it's the color of the person's skin that prevents them from getting access to education and tools and to get the grants to win the prizes? Well, then let's look at the recent election in Louisiana, where a man who is of colored skin from East India, was elected as the governor of Louisiana for the first time. A man of color, person of color, has been elected to this office since Reconstruction after the Civil War. So if the Southern white is so prejudiced, how come they elected a man of color to be their governor? Answer, because he is a conservative. And that is why you didn't hear about it in the news. It came and went like an arrow in the wind. That's because although he was a man of color, and although he was the first man of color to be elected to the governorship of Louisiana since Reconstruction, unfortunately, he was not a lib, socialist, anti-American, anti-military, anti-police, anti-family man of color. He was a man of substance and brains, tremendous educational facility, and he was elected governor. But he's a conservative. That's why you didn't hear about it on CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox News for more than 3 seconds. It didn't fit the agenda. It didn't fit the images that you're supposed to remember to be the only images you're allowed to hear. So what I'm getting at is, if you want to use the argument that Africa has been under the yoke of colonialism for so long, that's why the African has not been able to develop to the level that he needs to develop in order to win a Nobel Prize in Medicine or the Heart Sciences. How do you explain East India, people from East India, meaning India? If I say India, you're liable to think I'm saying Indian, like the Sioux and the whatnot. No, I'm talking about India. India. How come the Indians are so good at winning Nobel Prizes? They have colored skin. B, they were oppressed by the British colonialists for a very long period of time. Could it be they're more intelligent than some others, that continent is more intelligent, that the people are more intelligent? What's the answer to that one? How come the Indian civilization was so advanced so many thousands of years ago? More advanced, for example, than the civilizations of Europe and of Africa combined. Can you explain that one to me? Now, of course you can if you're a rational human being. But if you're a whacked out, brainwashed American, you can't explain anything. You don't know who you are. You don't know anything about anything. But I'm sure I'll get those callers. So that goes back to Dr. Watson. Dr. Watson suggested that the intelligence levels of Africans may not be as high as that of others. Now, you could say it's controversial and debatable, and we could argue over it, use data analysis, but you don't fire a man for that unless you want to live in the ex-Soviet Union, which is where you rat scum progressives belong.
Dad came to this country in pursuit of the American dream. And guess what happened? They found the American dream to be alive and well right here in Louisiana.
Now that's Bobby Jindal, newly elected governor of Louisiana. He is, if you want to talk about color, he's a man of color. He's from India. Family's from India. Elected governor of Louisiana, the first man of color since Reconstruction times. So how do you explain that? Any explanation for that? If the cracker is such a racist, how come they would elect this man as governor? Answer, because they aren't. The racists are the liberals in the media. They're the true racists in this country. Make no mistake about it. They use black people in order to provoke hatred between the races. And so it goes back to the other question of that Dr. Watson made. Now, I may or may not agree with him, incidentally, but I don't believe a man should be fired for posing a question that needs to be analyzed. If you do, then you belong in the ex-Soviet Union. You probably don't even have an opposable thumb. Mentally, you are lower than the Bornean orangutan who has an opposable thumb on all four hands. You're probably mentally lower than the gorilla, which has opposable thumbs on all four hands. I would think that you knuckle draggers don't have any opposable thumbs at all. I would think that you're lower than an old world monkey. Even the koala has an opposable toe on each foot. The opossum even has an opposable thumb on rear feet. But some of you progressives mentally don't have any opposable thumbs in your head. You can't grasp a real idea, can you? Everything to you is based upon economics and race. Nothing is based upon individual talent and individual rights, is it? So these are very important questions, and I'm not going to be bullied by anyone in my audience. I'm not going to be bullied by you no matter what you say. And, you know, I occasionally do listen to other shows here and there, as we all do. I've noticed something in the tone of many people on the to the right of the center, and that is they're sounding defeated. They're sounding like they've given up, and they're talking too nice to the progressives, to the left, to the liberals. They're making it sound as though they're appealing to them and want to bring them into – they want to be accepted by the liberal or the progressives. They're giving up. They think that they're in the ascent and conservatives are in the descent. You couldn't be more further from the truth if you tried. You've been brainwashed like the American people have through the government media complex into thinking that the progressives have won. They have won jack, my friend. And again, I go back to the Iraq war movies, the anti-war movies. They're dying. The people don't want to buy that crap, and they're not going to buy the bill of goods that Hillary and the other leftists in the Democrat Party are selling when they come to election time, unless the Republicans blow it, which they could easily do given who they are. But I want to tell you something. If we had a truly intelligent conservative candidate with real credentials, he would sweep the next election. If he was a true social conservative, and if he was a fiscal conservative, and if he was strong against Islamofascism, he wins by a land mile. A land mile. He smears the progressives, and he drives them back into the holes they came out of. So don't give up all of a sudden. We just don't have the right representatives in the media. We don't have the right representatives in the political arena yet. And that is the real problem here, is that many of you are giving up because all you hear is left-wing garbage day and night. So as any truly brainwashed citizen would do, you start to believe it's true. So you want to talk about any of these topics, I'm open to it. There are some great stories I'm probably not going to get to, and I want to point out to one of you who understand that George Soros is the most dangerous man in America, if not in the world. Something has happened that you're not going to hear about in the news. It's on my website, michaelsavage.com. Where is it? Oh, he dropped it already? No. Top left, second story down. Breaking news. Soros-related firm raided by the FBI. This is a stunner of a story. And it's a WellCare health plan company of Tampa, Florida. And people have been trying to figure out how it's been able to make so much money running government health plans for the poor and elderly. And it was owned by George Soros. So the FBI broke into this company over the weekend. They swarmed into the WellCare company, and they walked out with boxes of records. Now, what is WellCare? Well, they make their money on Medicare contracts. Sound like George Soros to you? A man who loves the poor, but the man who is capitalizing on the poor, in my estimation? Well, read the whole story on michaelsavage.com. WellCare was a slow-growing Florida company until 1992 when its owner, Dr. Kiran Patel, clever those boys, sold it to a New York investment group led by none other than financier Georgie, the America hater Soros. The bankers then hired Todd Farah, an aggressive Harvard MBA, to transform the company. And under his leadership, WellCare's earnings have increased eightfold, and investors are making a fortune on it. Well, the government wanted to know how they did it. How in the world could they have made so much money on Medicare contracts? Well, we don't know the answer yet, but the FBI is looking into it. But here's a little stinger for you on the story. The company has a board of directors, as do all companies that are public. And guess who's on the company's board? Why, the head of the Florida agency that oversees Medicaid, Dr. Andrew Agwunobi. Now, don't say that people with those kinds of names don't have too much intelligence, because Dr. Agwunobi was a director for 6 months of this Florida agency that oversees Medicaid. And after only 6 months on the job, he was picked to serve on WellCare's board. And Mr. Agwunobi then received stock, which he sold for more than $1 million. Not bad for 6 months' work for the state of Florida, but it gets even better. Current WellCare board members include former Florida Senator Bob Graham, Republican, and Reuben King Shaw, former head of Florida's health agency, and an ex-deputy chief at Medicare. There aren't enough jails in this country for the corruption that we the people are living through. And so look at the story. FBI raid shutters Medicare insurer. It's on my website. And George Soros is probably fueling up one of his fleet of jets. Unfortunately, I don't think there's a country on earth that he can fly to where he can get away from the FBI. And let's hope that this turns out to be just smoke and mirrors and that he is as innocent as he appears to be. 1-800-449-8255. Austin, Texas. Christian, go ahead, please.
You know, the thing is about Africa, I think that you're ignoring just a couple things. One is that they weren't, India wasn't raided the way Africa was for slaves. And so, you know, generations of their best.
Wait, hold on. Let's stop right there. India was not raided as Africa was for slaves. You mean the hundreds of millions of Indians living in the gutters are living better than slaves lived? The people living in the actual filth of the gutter?
No, not at all. I'm not claiming that. But their best and brightest were not exported the same way that the slaves in Africa were for.
You're implying that all of those who were captured and by the Arabs, by the way, not by the English. So let's be clear. You agree on that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the Africans who were captured for slavery were captured by Arab slave traders. And you're saying they were the best and brightest of Africa? How would you know that to be true?
Well,
you could argue they were not the best and brightest. Maybe they were the stupidest. How do you know? Isn't that a theory worth analyzing? How would you know whether they're the brightest or the dumbest or in between, just randomly picked, randomly caught, rather? How would you know?
Well, I don't think you can know for sure, but the fact is that...
But you said definitively that the Africans who were unfortunately grabbed for the slave trade were the best and brightest. You know that that's impossible to prove or disprove.
Well, but what kind of slaves would people look for? They wouldn't look for the weak ones. They look for the strong ones, the ones that are proven, you know, that they could...
So let's stop right here. Let's put race aside. Are you implying that in our society, the man who is the strongest looking is the most intelligent?
No, certainly not.
See, look, Christian, you're an intelligent guy and you are capable of logic and reason. And for that, I give you credit because you're one of the rare ones in America. At least someone can talk to you and raise a point and you can answer it rationally. For that alone, I'm thrilled that I'm above the fourth grade level here in talk radio today. I'm just shocked that I got somebody who can actually reason. Thank you very much for the call. That's another thing, you know, maybe I'm starting to sound elitist and pompous. I don't know. Maybe I always have. But one of the things that's eating me alive in talk radio, I got to tell you, you know, you want me to level with you, which I do every day. Remember, I'm a highly educated man. I killed myself for my advanced degrees, my PhD, a real one, not a fake one given out by university to one of these shysters who gave him a donation or one of these social activists who's given a degree simply for causing mayhem. I actually earned my PhD and published a dissertation as a book. And then I had two prior master's degrees. And I'm very proud to tell you my master's thesis in ethnobotany was published in its entirety by a journal at Harvard University. I never talk about these things, but, you know, I have this higher education. I don't use it. And so I get into talk radio, and most of the time I feel as though I'm in front of a sixth or seventh grade class. I'm not saying all of you are in the sixth or seventh grade mentally, but the mentality in talk radio is really no higher than that of the seventh grade. If you listen to most talk radio, you know what it is? It's Democrat, Republican, Bush. It's so unbelievable it can put you to sleep. It's boring, which is why the format is threatened with extinction. I got to tell you something. Talk radio is threatened with extinction because it has been dumbed down by too many people who have been trying to copy Rush Limbaugh and just a very few other originals in the business. You can't copy this all day long and expect this format to stay alive. People get bored to death of it. You know, just as the cable news channels all copy each other, and as I told you, they were once exciting and different, I can't watch them anymore. Not only have they all moved to the center, but they've all become salacious entertainment channels by and large, particularly Fox, I have to tell you, between Scarface and a few of the others. Okay, that's number one. But then they all break for the news at exactly the same second each time in the hour, which I find to be astonishing that the FCC permits this. If I'm watching Fox and I want to flip to MSNBC or CNN and I find the ad broke at the same minute and it's usually the same ad, doesn't it look like a monopoly to you? Of course it is. It's a monopoly of the advertising division of these companies. That's another issue that we got to talk about another day here. What I'm saying to you is, but the mentality of these cable channels is about fifth, sixth grade. A reasonably intelligent fifth or sixth grader can follow the news on CNN. And it's not much higher anywhere else. So now you get into talk radio. And what do you have? You have really the same wrestling match. There very rarely do you get any kind of detailed analysis of an idea. And so many liberals who would listen to talk radio, maybe they tune in and they listen to it and they say, what a bunch of idiots. God, they're illiterate morons. And then they go back to the tried and true brainwashing channel called NPR, which, by the way, should be closed down because it competes with us without having to run ads. How can you rate a station that has 1 hour of talk with no ads? Of course they're going to do better than I am. You give me one straight hour without ads and I'd be broke, but my ratings would be double. So thank God I have people who believe in this show and support it. But I don't want to get too far from the point. The point is that AM talk radio can be so amazingly interesting and exciting if only the people in this business were to not be so darn lazy and go to the lowest common denominator. And that's an important story. So I guess what I'm saying is I've been in the doldrums lately with talk radio, my own show in particular. And the only way out of this for me, the only way out of it for me is to do what I would talk about what I find interesting. So yesterday or the day before, I told you I'd gone to a gallery and I was interested in antiques. Now, most of you are not interested in antiques, but I had some wonderful callers and I had callers I didn't get to who were super literate on antiques. I thought that would be a great segment. I love paintings and I love sculpture. Why can't we talk about that? Why must we talk about this level of wrestling match stuff? Why must we be intellectually at the same level as Lindsay Lohan or of Paris Hilton? You think we're much higher than she is? If we're talking about her, of course we're not. We're wasting our intellect. We're wasting our God-given time on earth to talk about such nonsense. So what I'm saying to you is I may start doing different things on this show, and you may find it uninteresting because you may say, well, who wants to talk about, hey, who does he think he is? It's way over my head. I don't want to talk about it. I want to talk about, look, I'm just going to do what I'm going to do, and I'll have to let the chips fall where they may. It could turn out that I'm 100% right, and it'll turn out for the best. Or it could turn out that I'm 100% wrong or 50% wrong, and my audience will disappear, or a good portion of it, because they really want to hear Hillary versus Giuliani. The Giuliani Red Sox Yankees. If that's what you want, that's what you want. It's not what I want, and I can't do radio if that's all I'm supposed to. If that's all I've been doing, I apologize to you. There's an awful lot of my education that I haven't tapped into, and it's like a platinum mine waiting to be tapped into. And I'm going to go into the platinum mine of my history and my education and my background, and that's the end of it. So there it is. And that comes back to one of the topics I raised today, the incendiary topic of Dr. Watson. He got fired from Cold Spring Harbor, and they lost a wonderful man because he said something controversial, which I may or may not agree with, by the way. I haven't analyzed the data well enough to agree or disagree with him. But I don't want to live in a country that fires a person for raising a question. If you do, you belong in the ex-Soviet Union. You're a psychotic, primitive bully is what you are. And it's very dangerous to live in a country like that because you will be targeted tomorrow. Do you understand that? Yes, of course you do, boys and girls. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to the Savage Nation. Now, we realize that the reason we have the politicians we have is because we deserve them. The reason we have politicians such as Barbara Boxer who can get away with telling lies about the fires, saying that the equipment that the National Guard needed was in Iraq, and that she's not arrested for sedition for this, is because the so-called liberal progressives in America, they know she's a liar, and they know that her hot old pants are always on fire. But they figure, hey, you know what? She took a good shot at the war. What's the difference? Well, she's no different than Osama bin Laden for saying a thing like that. How do you like that? Now, I'm going to take a quick break, and I'll be back.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation, particularly those of you who have opposable thumbs in your brain, those of you who don't, who can't grasp an idea, I suggest you go listen to NPR. Monterey, California, Alan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I don't think there's any need to evaluate IQ data or compare objective IQ numbers. Can't we just look at societies and people and see what they've produced over the years? Are we still waiting for the is the 50 cent mobile still in development? You're driving a Ferrari. I don't think that you have to think too much about this, do you? What have they produced?
Who? What has who produced?
We're talking about the Dr. James Watson and his comments.
All right, but let's analyze it. You're an intelligent man, but before rushing the judgment, let's look at the colonial history of Africa. You could argue that because the people were basically enslaved and their riches stolen, their development was hampered in Africa. Couldn't you?
Could you say that about the Jews and their problems and look where they have gone?
No. Could you say that about the people from India? That's what I was just saying. India was under the colonial yoke of Britain for hundreds of years. And yet India, despite the tens of millions of people in the gutter, the untouchables, that caste of people, India has still produced and still is producing people of astonishing accomplishment. How do you explain that?
Differences between people. Some have evolved, and they don't want to hear this, but some have evolved more than others, and that's just...
Well, hold it now. So wouldn't you then be arguing, wouldn't your arguments be considered racist?
They would. But in fact, racism is prejudice based upon information that is faulty. If the information that you're supplying about a racial topic is correct, it's not racism.
Don't tell that to Al Sharpton. He's liable to hold another million-man march. I hear he's going to have a march now based upon the noose and something else. He's found a topic that can put him back in the news. So maybe he'll get a Nobel Prize for agitation.
We are the racists. Sharpton.
Yeah, well, we know who the racists are. We know who the race hucksters are. I'm astonished that Fox News calls him Reverend Sharpton, when to this day I don't know if he's ever earned a divinity degree. Do you? Can you prove he has a divinity degree? He has an agitation degree, as far as I can tell.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show,
The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, round two.
My lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing.
Now, when this tune was big, Cadillac still made a car that was amazing. They may do it today, but I have a 1965 two-door DeVille with about 55,000 miles on it. And I've talked about it from time to time on the show, and I keep it as a memento of America when the chrome was thick and the women were straight. Last night was another very stiflingly hot night here in Northern California. No fires, of course, but hot. Just one of those rare Indian summer days that some people love. I could do without it. I can't wait for the colder, wetter days. But I made the best of it. Now, I have a number of cars in various garages. I haven't driven this one for 3 months. So I went to the garage where the 65 Caddy is. I disconnected the battery charger cables. I keep a little trickle charger on it because they will run down, by the way, without them. And Teddy and I took a ride. And we drove around Marin County on back roads, and we went over to a little restaurant. I had a pizza and a beer with him sitting next to me. He had some cheese. They brought the formaggio over for him. I cut it up in a plate. He liked the pizza, the cheese. I liked the beer. I didn't give him any. And I drove it. I'm going to get to a point. And one of the things I noticed about this car is not only the ride is, it's incomparable. I don't understand it. I have cars right now worth 10 times more than that. Maybe 20. I mean, really, dollar-wise, I do. And you can't compare the two. If you were in a road race on a road, I'd want to be in a new car that I have, not that one. But if you want to take a leisurely drive at night off a highway, I can't think of a car that's more comfortable than the 65 Caddy. So we put the top down, and we drove around. We went to downtown Tiburon. I don't know where we went, around here, there. And Teddy snuggled up next to me. I guess he got a little, you know, cold, and he gets a little scared when the top comes down. He's not used like, Daddy, where'd the top go? What's this? What is that above me? Where's the? It's the sky, son, you know. So we rode around with my arm over the dog. I mean, we're really so bonded, I'm afraid, with this one. I mean, thank God he's only three. I don't know. I don't want to look forward to this thing. I mean, if he starts to cough, I get nervous. That's how bad this is getting. So he and I ride around, and the car is so amazingly smooth. I'm just listening to the exhaust and the engine. I marvel at the thickness of the glass, the thickness of the chrome, the thickness of the steel. I marvel at this car, and I can't understand why American industry can't produce the best car in the world today. I mean, I know if they knocked out a 20-foot Cadillac today, convertible, and charged $100,000, they'd have orders backed up for the next 10 years. But you can't tell this to the idiots who run companies today. They are all of the same MBA types. I don't care if they work for a soda company, a car company, a pencil company, an internet company. They're the same mentality. They can walk from one company to the other because they have no imagination and no creativity. And that's why this country is in trouble. We've lost our creativity. That's what I'm trying to get at. In order to have creativity, you have to have people who can think and be daring and think outside certain norms. The guy who gets up and is grumpy in the morning, who may not shave, and he comes in, he's not a team player. He doesn't like to go to the ball game with you on the weekend. He has nothing to do with the people in the office, but he might be there till 10 o'clock at night sitting and doodling on a desk. Or he might come in at 5 o'clock in the morning, or he might not come in till noon one day, but he could come in with the best idea. Those days are gone. There's no room for them in America today. It's the most buttoned-down time in American history, which is why we're crippled from the military into the automobile industry, into the media. We're crippled. The person who's a true independent is almost non-existent. I happen to be one of the few. I am one of the last of the Mohicans of the we used to call a man like me a Renaissance man. I don't know what that really means, but the fact of the matter is I'm a multifaceted individual, and I'm a great storyteller, highly educated, and I'm enthusiastic when I have an idea that I'm enthused by. But the point I'm making is, how many of us exist anymore in the corporate world? I don't know if they exist at all, because if you have that spirit, where do you go? You build your own business usually. Because you don't want anyone telling you can't do it, and you got to go through John, and we have a meeting on Tuesday. By the time Tuesday comes around, you don't even want to develop the idea anymore. By Tuesday, you've already raised capital, seed capital for the idea, by going out and trying to do it on your own. And that's why the small business in this country is still the engine of the economy, which leads me to the crushing of America under the Democrats, if God forbid they should win. Charlie Rangel has come up with a plan of taxing those people who are exactly the types that we need to drive the engine of this economy. He wants a 4% surtax on incomes above $150,000 and almost 5% above $250,000 for a couple. In other words, he's aiming it right at the entrepreneur. Right at the entrepreneur, this is exactly what has crushed societies in the past, which is targeting the creative and the builder. Now, that's why the Democrat socialists will destroy this country if, God forbid, they should wrest power from the corrupt Republicans. I think that the corrupt Republicans at this point are sufficiently chastened to possibly be less corrupt, and certainly they wouldn't tax the creators out of business. But that's a separate story. There's almost no conversation here with the largest individual income tax increase in American history. It will destroy this country's economy as sure as I'm sitting here. But that's one topic that I'd rather not talk about. I'd rather talk about some other topics, such as race or nationality and intelligence, which has gotten one of our one of our best scientific minds thrown out of a job, which is amazing to me that we live in a society where you can lose a job for an idea. It's shocking. But then I'm not so shocked when I see that a yenta like Barbara Boxer, who would shoot off that mouth of hers and say that the fires were so bad because the National Guard didn't have the equipment it needed, which is a bald-faced, filthy lie, and doesn't mention a word about the illegal aliens who were caught setting the fires or the others setting the fires, the arsonists. You know, that's a bigger story. We could talk about them. I have a list in my hand of Nobel laureates for physics going back to 1901. Now, I don't expect you to know these names because I don't know more than a few of them. I'm not a physicist. But if I go back to some names that the reasonably college-educated may have learned in his time, you may recognize some of them and the country of origin. So we go back to 1918, Max Planck, Germany. Then 1921, everyone knows who Albert Einstein is. I would assume anybody who has more than a ninth grade education heard of Albert Einstein. He won it in 1921. He was from Germany and Switzerland, and he was Jewish. 1922, Niels Bohr, Denmark. I'm giving names that you may have heard of, but I'm going to show you a couple of points out of this. 1930 now, the very same Nobel Prize in physics was given to Venkata Raman in India. Now, I'll pause right there for a moment. I never heard of this gentleman, but remember, in 1930, India was very much under the colonial boot of Britain, wasn't it? So how do you explain that a man from India in 1930 could win a Nobel Prize? If you're going to argue that colonialism kept people down and therefore that's why they have not developed sufficiently to even enter the Nobel Prize running, how do you explain this man from India during colonialism winning a Nobel Prize? Now, let's go down the list together. We're trying to reason together. I know those are words that are fighting words in America today. If you say let's reason together to a progressive racist, they won't listen to your reason. They want to win by intimidation. But they got the wrong customer here because I'm not going to be intimidated. My ideas are not going to be driven off the radio because they're too important for freedom of speech. 1938, Enrico Fermi, Italy. You may have heard of him. Nobel Prize of Physics. So we move up. I'm just going to search a little bit more here with the whole list. Japan, 1949. Now, how could a man, Hideki Yukawa, win a Nobel Prize in Physics in 1949? After all, if you're arguing that it was the oppression of the white male that kept these people of color down, how do you explain a Japanese winning a Nobel Prize for Physics in 1949 when Japan had been smashed by two atomic bombs and lost World War II? Think about that one. Now let's move down the list. 1957, Chen Ning Yang wins the physics Nobel in China. China, 1957, perhaps the most impoverished nation on earth, proportionate to the population. China, he wins the prize. 1958, Pavel Cherenkov, USSR. Igor Tamin, USSR. You're not going to argue that the Soviet Union was a glorious land for freedom, are you? And yet the brains in Russia obviously were pretty amazing. And we move on, 1962, USSR, Lev Landau. You get where I'm going here? 1964, Alexander Prokhorov, USSR, and so forth and so on. France, UK, USA, UK, USA, Samuel C. C. Ting, USA, all the way up until the present time when the 2007 Nobel laureate for physics was given to a man from France named Albert Fert and Peter Grunberg of Germany. In 2006, it was given to two gentlemen from the United States of America, and so forth and so on. Going back again, we are drawing some kinds of conclusions here. And, of course, they're uncomfortable conclusions, I realize, for the racists amongst you who do not want to listen to reality and don't want to reason. What you want to do is blame everybody but yourself for your lack of achievement. You don't want to take responsibility for your own lack of drive or intelligence. You can't blame people for the rest of your lives. It will only cripple you. Do you understand that? So if you want to talk about that, we could do it. Otherwise, you can go back to meat and potatoes, the arson, we go back to the seventh grade level, if you'd like. Or we could think above the seventh grade and talk about various cultures or societies and how they encourage ideas. So let's go to KNEW. Mike wants to talk about African versus the culture of India. KNEW, Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Hey, Mike, I just want to throw out an idea I had about the issue that you're talking about. I would say that the Indians had their culture was more in line with the British, so they had an easier time to assimilate, whereas the Africans, when they were taken as slaves, were hunter-gatherers, basically. So they had when they were taken out of their culture, they just had a tougher time to...
We're not talking about people taken out of their culture. We're talking about people who were never taken out of their culture. South Africa, for example, has universities. The University of Transvaal is a legitimate world-class institution. Why have we seen no Nobel Prizes coming out of these universities?
I don't know.
Well, nobody knows. Well, we can ask the question, can't we?
Logical hindrance for Africans as to why they can't get Nobel Prizes.
What's the answer?
Well, I don't know. I'm just trying to add to the discussion. I don't have any answers, but...
Well, we're all having a discussion. I suppose this is a very uncomfortable discussion and illegal, probably, in the new America. But we'll continue to do it until it's absolutely clarified by the U.S. government as a forbidden topic, because then we'll be moving right into the ex-Soviet Union, where certain topics were not to be discussed. I'll be right back. Is the Savage Nation. I realize many of you Bushbots are offended by this because I'm not supporting George Bush or the Republican Party, but you'll have to wait until tomorrow morning for the golfer to do that. We're talking about other things right now in the Savage Nation. I want to digress for a moment. We're talking about freedom of speech and free speech and what you can say and what you can do. Headline, Oklahoma lawmakers return Qurans. Several Oklahoma lawmakers plan to return copies of the Quran to a state panel on diversity after a lawmaker claimed the Muslim holy book condones the killing of innocent people. You see, the books were given to Oklahoma's 149 senators and reps by the governor's Ethnic American Advisory Council. In other words, the fascists disguised themselves as a diversity people. Make no mistake about it, the diversity business is filled with fascists who want to impose their view of the world on everybody else, mainly on white males. So, at least 17 legislators have notified the panel they will return the gift. Now, Marjana Sarifi-Pour, how come they all have these hyphenated long names? Chairwoman of the council and a Muslim denounced this. And she said, I know he referred to Islam as an ideology. This is not a fact. It is a religion. It is a very peaceful, very inclusive religion. Wait, she goes on. She said the legislative statements are disturbing and offensive to Muslims, and it just points out the amount of education about Islam and the American Muslim community that is needed in all levels of our society, including elected officials, said the spokesmouth for CAIR. So there it is. Now, as you well know, this is an attempt to brainwash white males into accepting the Quran. So watch out for these panels on diversity. When I was at a local radio station, I had to go through diversity training. It was the most racist, insulting day of my adult life. And I'm proud to tell you, I was the only one in the entire room to stand up to them. They were the most evil people I've encountered in my entire life. And diversity training was then discontinued by that local station because of what they try to do, turning everyone against white males. It was disgusting. You shouldn't have to go through it. And I have told you before, if you're forced to go through diversity training, you should sue the company and sue the diversity trainers for humiliating you and lying to you. You can probably win in a court of law. We can stop this. It's a whole separate story for another day. Fort Lauderdale, WFTL, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I love your show. Thank you for helping expand my mind.
Good.
Sir, I wanted to get back to the 17th, 18th century, if you would. John Stuart Mill. Are you familiar with the philosopher John
Stuart Mill? Well, I remember reading John Stuart Mill when I was an undergraduate, but for the average listener out there, you're going to have to boil it down quickly.
I just want to paraphrase him real quick. Anything in the public domain is open for questioning.
I see. Wait. So anything in the public domain is open for questioning. So Dr. Watson questions the relative intelligence of one nationality over another, and he's fired from his job for that. Do we still live in the United States of America?
No. Not at all.
No, we don't live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. We live in the land of the freak and the home of the brave. And we've got to stop them. And the only way to stop them is to yell at them and get in their faces. You got to out-sharpton the sharptons. You got to yell at them. And you got to call them what they are. And you got to tell them they're the racists. And you got to tell them, get out of your face.
Savage.
I was just sending an email to a friend in radio during the break, and I'm going to read it to you without telling you who it's going to. It says, P.S. I see Ann the Jew hater Colder is very visibly dating a Jewish type man and showing up in New York restaurants to boot. I said, wow, what PR? Lenny Riefenstahl could not have done better. And that's going to be sent on the send right now. Double click. There it goes. I thought I would share it with you first. That is good PR. That is good PR. You're accused of anti-Semitism. Your PR agent says, now, how do we get around this? I got it. Date a Jewish guy, or at least someone with a Jewish name. Go to a fancy restaurant in Manhattan, and then have the Jewish type man defend you when someone comes up to you and calls you what you are. Wow, what a stunt. I got to hand it to you. You know, the PR agents in America are really good. Perhaps there's going to be an Ann Coulter movie next called The Triumph of the Shill, and that might do very well in various regions of Bulgaria. Mark, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. You know, in defense of the Nobel Prize-winning geneticist, Dr. Watson, and his hypothesis that there may be a genetic link between intelligence and race, I'd like to look at a more of a contemporary example of this. If you remember, not too many years ago, Spike Lee put out a movie called White Men Can't Jump. And nobody made a big deal about it because his point was, if you look at the NBA, which is virtually all black players, it appears as though the black player can certainly jump higher than the white player. Now, do they eat differently? Do they train differently? No. There appears as though there's a genetic link between the blacks and whites that give blacks a physical ability that the whites don't have. Okay, to be able to jump higher. So if it's possible that you can have a genetic link to something physical, why isn't it also possible that there may be a genetic link intellectually to the races?
Well, Mark, you know, I'm going to have to take your phone number down and capture it and send it to the diversity FBI because I think you should be arrested for asking the question, Mark. You were doing very well till you asked the question. We don't live in America anymore where you can ask freely ask a question, Mark. That can get you in trouble. You understand that?
Yeah. Right.
I'm not gonna respond, but thank you very much. So, yeah, the Triumph of the Shill, Cadillacs. I'm more interested, actually, in microfiber towels that I just bought for my new car. The guy who washes cars. I bought it in the boat thing. They're expensive, $18 for three little towels. Ultra micro. Have you tried these things? Wet it, wring it, wipe it. Cotton fiber only pushes dirt and moisture around and scratches your car. Ultra microfiber lifts and traps dirt. They're amazing, these little cloths. How did they invent this? Was this invented in Africa, this microfiber towel? Who invented the microfiber towel, even a thing like this? That's not a Nobel Prize in physics. What country did this come out of? Who came up with this? I mean, you pick up any invention. Where are they coming from? What nationality is inventing even a microfiber towel? Who figured out that if you push a cotton towel, it pushes the dirt on a car and scratches it? But if you use a microfiber, it actually lifts and traps dirt and moisture. I mean, that's not on the level of a man with a PhD in physics. I have a friend I'm a brilliant friend. And his first invention, he's very conservative. He gives away a lot of money for great causes. His first invention was something that picked up like balls that get on sweaters, you know, like a little, they get it. I don't know what it's called. He figured it out. Huh? What did you say? Lint, like lint balls on sweaters. And he said he was, the way he figured out how to develop something that takes the lint balls off a sweater was he noticed that when people leaned against the concrete wall, something happened. Now, he didn't need a PhD in physics to figure it out. He just happens to be downright brilliant. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? There are smart people in the world. I guess you can level the playing field by not permitting them to think. you can actually outlaw creativity and intelligence because it intimidates others. I think that's important next. Do you know that Jesse Jackson during the Imus affair had the nerve to say that he wants to see more people of color in talk radio? I couldn't believe what I was listening to. Now, you got to understand, he's a flop in talk radio. So is Sharpton. They all put on the white collar when they want to intimidate corporations. Meanwhile, they have a schleppy show on the weekend that no one listens to. They're actually competing with people like me in talk radio. So they go and say, well, we want more affirmative action, in essence, in talk radio. I have all of this on my Freedom of Speech Award, which is why I was granted this award by the talkers industry, because I deserved it. The fact of the matter is you don't have to agree with what I say and everything I say to understand how important freedom of speech is. And we cannot permit race hucksters to destroy freedom of speech in this country. Don't you understand that? You don't have to agree with Watson. Argue with Watson. Prove him wrong. That's what should have happened. A black intellectual or a white liberal intellectual should have said, Dr. Watson is wrong because, and given us the reasons. That would have been a proper response. Not firing the man or intimidating the man off the stage. Then you're living in a thug nation. Don't you get it? Well, let's move on. That's all there is to it. Well, okay, you don't want to. It's a good topic. I know you don't want to move on. What else did I find? Another topic here. The microfiber towel, second arson fire in California, Guatemalan illegal alien. Oklahoma lawmakers return Quran. Boys' lack of interest in reading, a crisis. I wonder why boys are not interested in reading. They can click on a porno site while their parents are out of the house. What do they want to lose reading for? They're at an age where all they have is the hormones raging in there, and they're going to pick up a book on mathematics. They're going to read the complete thoughts of Albert Einstein instead of going on to a porn site. And they come up with the wrong answer. There's plenty of blame to go around, disengaged parents, uninterested publishing houses, distracting video games. How about pornography? That's what they're doing. What do you think the boys are doing? They're raging with hormones. And when no one's home, that's what they're doing. Their whole mind is getting, you know, sucked right into that tube. I think porno on the internet needs to be banned, completely eliminated, wiped off the map. I think it's the most destructive force in Western civilization. I think it will destroy us all. That's my opinion. It will destroy all of us. If you go on any of these sites, which I have done for research purposes, I'm shocked at the insanity that I see and that it's put out there. I cannot believe people do these things to each other. I never knew people did these things to each other. I can't believe this is what goes on between people. And to have this available on the internet, which means anybody, anywhere, at any time can access it, is destroying the entire mind of the human being. The entire mind of the human being, which is, by the way, why the Orthodox Jew and why the Orthodox Muslim does not permit television in their houses and probably would not permit this in their homes at all. I agree with them both 100% because they understand, of all people, what's at stake here. And the last thing they want to do is to see their daughter become one of these useless sluts, that the type you see in the porn. I don't blame them. I don't blame them at all. So they overreact and put him in a burqa, for example. That's an overreaction to this overreaction, which is freely accessible pornography throughout the universe. And I think that the governments need to ban it completely. Absolutely put an X through pornography on the internet. It won't happen, though, because the biggest purveyors of pornography on the internet happen to be some of the Fortune 50 companies. And who are they? They support the political structure. So we're finished, that's all. And how it ends, only God knows. God Sees the Truth But Waits is a great title. And, of course, many of you know who wrote it, which is Thomas Mann. It's a great, great short story. God Sees the Truth But Waits. And it was about the decline of Germany after World War I and the decadence that was setting into Germany after World War I. And I feel that the decadence that settled into Germany after World War I is baby play compared to this nation today. I am no moralist, but I'm going to tell you that the degeneracy in America, in the American mind today, far exceeds that of the Weimar Republic, which followed with the collapse of Germany after World War I. And following that came Hitler. Hitler came as a reaction to the degeneracy of the Weimar Republic. And unfortunately for the whole world, he came along because they could not control themselves. We are facing the very same thing. And unless We demand that the liars called politicians start reining in some of this filth and stop the sewer pipe from coming into every computer and every home in America. Unless we make them do it, there's a high likelihood that we will have fascism in your lifetime. It may be the only antidote to what we're going through today. I don't welcome it. I don't want it. I don't want to see it. But I have a fear that that's what's going to happen as a result of the salacious vomit that is being thrown at all of our brains by the collective insanity that we're all living in. Chicago, Alonzo, go ahead, please.
Well, Dr. Savage, I agree that Dr. Watson can say what he wants to. I may not agree with it, but I don't think he's taken into account all the variables, because Africa was a primitive and a tribal people, and they live up under dictators and brutal, brutal dictators who suppress education, who keep their people ignorant. And then you have this onslaught of slavery, and you have that Africans were not allowed to educate themselves. So I think,
well, hold on. Let's take your argument on the face of it. I'm not here to say I disagree with you off the face of it. China was in the grip for centuries of warlords who brutalized their people. And yet, even though communism was a brutality that we can't even imagine, which accounted for the deaths of 60 million Chinese under Mao Zedong, the hero of the progressive left in America, how do you account for the fact that the Chinese produce such brilliant minds?
They still educated themselves. What I'm saying is they had no outside influences. So they did believe...
Well, wait, you're right. The Chinese had a written language thousands of years ago, which again begs the question, how come they had a written language thousands of years ago? And the Assyrians had a written language, and the Egyptians had a written language. You know, how did they develop a written language, all of these societies? And was it based upon, is it nature or nurture? I mean, you know, is the old question. You know, the only truth to this argument, and it's a very embarrassing one, Alonzo, and I don't sit here wanting to make people feel bad just because of the color of their skin. The only truth will be told in 100 years. Actually, is when the truth to this argument will be worked out. That's the bottom line here. Maybe it's going to take another 100 years to answer this question. Do you agree that that's a possibility?
Well, that's a possibility, but there are so many different languages and different tribals and different customs from that whole continent of Africa, that they don't have a China system where it's one language and one autonomy there. So you understand what I'm saying? And these people have all...
Well, now, wait a minute. Let's look at India. There are many dialects in India, many castes in India, and yet the people seem to produce amazing things, the Indian people. How is it that that's possible? They have dialects and they have castes. I don't know that someone from the lowest caste of India has ever won any big prize, and that would tend to support your argument in the sense that they were kept down and they had no chance to get out from the bottom. I mean, certainly there's truth to that. I've heard the argument. But how do you explain, Alonzo, that there were people in this country living in the most abject poverty you can ever imagine? They came from the poorest of the poor, and they rose to the heights of their professions or their fields. How do you account for that?
Well, I account for that because the British educated them. They didn't enslave them.
No, I'm talking about America right now. Here is a free system in America. How do you figure out that Italians and Jews and Irish and Romanians and Hungarians and Russians came here by the millions, and they were not worth more than the shirt they had in their back? How come they were able to move up so fast and so, and some of them produce such amazing things? How do you explain that?
They didn't have the segregation, Dr. Savage. Dr. Savage, a black man in America was considered 3/5 of a human being.
I know the way Ann Coulter considers Jews 4/5 a person, because she's not a completed Christian. I understand that. All right, look, I'm not going to say that, you know, 100% disagree with you, Alonzo. There is a definite, I'm going to use a phrase now that I want to use very carefully here so I'm not misinterpreted, and I don't want to be overly glib. There are people who are branded by racism that cauterizes them for an awful long period of time. Does that work?
That's true, definitely, but let's not bring these civil rights pimps up who keep us down.
Okay. No, I sensed you were a fair-minded man who was not going to suddenly move over to the other side. I sensed that. I didn't know where you were coming from, but I wanted to be fair to this discussion, Alonzo. I got to tell you another thing here. In my life, I've done numerous things, and I was once a teacher in junior high school, and I taught in an all-black junior high school in Jamaica, Long Island. And I saw such terrible things. Now, it was long before the guns came into the schools. They had, you know, they would this and that. But I saw kids who were extremely intelligent, who came from nothing, who were dying to learn, Alonzo. And you know what happened? There were other kids in the class who wouldn't let them learn. They interrupted me. They threw things at the board. They fought with each other. Well, I had a little technique that I used to help the kids who did want to learn. I was young. I was 20 years old. I was a young graduate. And I said, and I was very young looking. So I mean, some of these kids could have taken me and thrown me out of the window. They were big. I said, look, here's the way it's going to work. I'm here to teach you science. If you want to mess up, I can't stop you, and I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to call the principal. I'm going to read the New York Times here. I'm going to throw my feet up on the chair. You're going to lose my time, and you could do what you want. So I'd start to teach, and next thing I know, there's a ruckus, and kids are fighting with each other. I'd sit down and read the paper, throw my feet up. And you know what happened, Alonzo? Some of the girl students, who were as tough as the boys, they got up and they slapped those boys around and they said, you sit down and you let Mr. Savage teach us now. And I swear to you, as I sit here, as God is my witness, I was able to control that classroom by giving the students the option as to whether or not they wanted to learn. Now, that was then. I don't know that that could work today, Alonzo. Today, they probably shoot a teacher who did that. Thanks for the call. I'll be back. Is the Savage Nation. In the next hour, we're going to talk about the fires in Southern California, and we have someone who unfortunately knows an awful lot about them, more than he'd like to. Rick Roberts lives in San Diego, and I think he lost an awful lot down there, and he's going to be doing this hour to talk about the fires. We want a man on the ground who really knows what he's talking about. Let's get a real measure of it. But right now, we'll continue to talk about what we're talking about. Salt Lake City, Dennis, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
First, I'd like to submit to you the probability that some of the slaves that were captured were simply slower than the others. And I'd be interested in how the doctor measured intelligence. My understanding, I'm no expert in it, is that it's the ability to problem solve, and ideally problems presented that culture and genetics can't prepare you for. And so I'd be interested in exploring that, and I'll take my own initiative to find that out, because I think you're right. Free exchange of ideas and argument is the best way. The unfortunate
thing. Yeah, I don't have an answer to your question, but, you know, that's an interesting proposal that you make. How would you explain, let's go to a human tragedy. Let's take the Holocaust against the Jews. You're not going to argue that the slowest were caught and gassed, would you?
Oh, no, some percentage we were just in the wrong people were in the wrong place in the wrong time, you know.
In other words, you could be super intelligent in Africa. You could have been the smartest guy in the smartest tribe and in the wrong place at the wrong time and captured, right?
Yeah, that is true. What I'd like to submit to you is, you know, I would be a moron if I was dropped in the Amazon and presented the problems of surviving in the Amazon.
Exactly. No, I'm glad you said that, because I've spent years in so-called primitive areas, and believe me, I'm a babe in the woods. I wouldn't know the first thing about surviving off the land. And so how do you rank the intelligence, for example, of the person who can live off which leaf to eat, which berry is not poisonous, how to make a house out of bamboo, how to make an axe out of a rock? I mean, what kind of intelligence does that take? You know, so, yeah, I agree. However, when we come to the modern society, what skills do we need now? Do we need those skills, or do we need technological skills? And that becomes the question. I suppose it has to be related to the time that we're living in and what we want to achieve as a society.
I'd like to propose to you that in general, you know, different cultures and ethnic groups have different strengths and weaknesses, and that each, you know, our strengths were designed to add to each other, add to the collective whole called man.
Exactly. That's what made America great. For example, the code talkers in World War II. The Japanese were unable to break their code because they never heard the language spoken before. Now, that was a great addition to the U.S. military, was it not?
Yes, it was.
I'm not saying it was the most important element of World War II, but it was certainly a very important element for the guys who would have been killed without the Native American code talkers. That'll be it for this hour on Race and Intelligence on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, it's no secret that Southern California is more or less, you know, not only still on fire in some places, but devastated in places ranging from Santa Barbara to San Diego. Over 700,000 people have been evacuated, which I believe is the largest evacuation in American history. 500,000 acres have burned. $1 billion at least in property damage. And so I want to go to the spot itself. I want to go down to the disaster area itself. Consequently, I'm going to be handing off to my colleague, Rick Roberts, for the next hour of the show. Rick is a great friend of the Savage Nation, but he's also a San Diego resident, and he has, unfortunately, been personally affected by these fires, seriously affected. For a first-hand view, we have invited him here today to the Savage Nation to give you special in-depth coverage of this, the biggest natural disaster since Katrina.
Michael, thank you very much. This is Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation, and I appreciate that so much, Michael. This is a different day for Southern California, in as much as I can honestly say, for the first time since this past Sunday evening, this particular part of the country has turned the corner. To say that the worst has passed, I think you can say that cautiously. And for this hour, we'll be discussing what we have talked about. Of course, I do the morning show at 760 KFMB, the Savage affiliate here in San Diego. KFMB is my flagship. I am normally on from 5 a.m. to 9:45 a.m. Since Monday morning, I've been on the air from 5 a.m. to 3:30 or 4 o'clock p.m. That 10 or 11-hour broadcast day literally went by in the blink of an eye. We were going 24/7 coverage, as most of you in Southern California know, because the size, the scope of what we were experiencing was something that no one had ever seen. And Michael was correct. The largest evacuation in history of this state. Absolutely phenomenal. I'll give you some idea. When I began the broadcast day at 5 a.m., and people were bringing in updates literally by the minute, 500,000 people, a half a million people evacuated on their own in 36 hours. Now, I know it's hard to wrap your head around those type of numbers, 500,000 people evacuating themselves in 36 hours. And of course, that number grew and grew and grew, and Michael is correct, in some cases throughout the whole of the state, nearly a million people. It was absolutely phenomenal. It not so much as a broken finger, because they were doing it themselves. And I made the statement, you can't move 500,000 of anything across the street without some damage, yet 500,000 people fled their homes, in some cases with the flames literally behind them, without any incident whatsoever. Of course, since that time, things have changed. But I can say today that we have turned the corner. People are starting to go back to their homes, and some are starting to go back to where their homes were. It still is staggering to me, after being in talk radio all these years. I look out across the audience, as we all do in this business, And we naturally, if we're in the business a while, from a cynical standpoint, expect the worst. And we're constantly shocked by what we see, the human spirit coming through. At this particular point in time, people are going back. The largest mass evacuation in California history, as Michael said. Unfortunately, agents from the FBI, the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, they're investigating the Orange County fires, arson perhaps. We have cases of, well, in one case, a looter was shot and killed. I shed no tears for that person. Stealing food and water and supplies from evacuees. I want to try to give you some measure of just how big this was. This was, well, I shouldn't use the past tense, the fires are still raging. At the height, over 10,000 firefighters involved, 42 helicopters just in this particular part of the country, the slurry bombers that you've seen on all the national news shows. A total burn area across California expanded to nearly 500,000 acres. That's 753 square miles. Now, to put that in perspective, that would be like all of New York City and the surrounding burgs going up in flames. It is just absolutely amazing. And I've seen a lot of the coverage, and I must tell you, they seem to go for the best shot. The best shot, of course, being out away from the city, the line, the firewall, as it's called, being fanned by the Santa Anas. That seems to be the best shot. But the total devastation within the cities was absolutely staggering. The number of homes destroyed just in the San Diego area is approaching 2,000 homes. Close to 1 million people in all evacuated. The fire is starting to diminish. Thousands are currently trying to repopulate. In some particular neighborhoods, you will round a corner to be met by a Humvee with two National Guardsmen, M16 in hand, saying, sorry, you can't go this way. This afternoon, there were a lot of problems in one particular area called the Ramona area, where people were told, you can go back. No, we've changed our minds. It is just a monumental human effort that's playing itself out in Southern California. But I've got to tell you something. I've got to tell you this. In all my broadcasting years, I have never seen the human spirit come out in a way that it has come out over the last several days. They are calling this Hurricane Katrina by fire. Now, to put this in perspective, Hurricane Katrina, 50,000 people were evacuated, 50,000. Nearly 700,000 were evacuated here, upwards of 1 million statewide. It was not similar in any size, shape, or scope other than we didn't wait. We didn't wait on the government. Right down the hall, as I said, I do the morning show here on the Savage affiliate KFMB in San Diego. We're also with News 8, the television station here, Larry Himmel. And, of course, you've heard his story. Larry was out covering the fires, the 4S Ranch area, which is a neighborhood here in San Diego. As he's covering the fires on camera, he walks up to what was his home earlier that morning, completely destroyed by fire. There have been story after story after story, people reaching out to one another as human beings are prone to do in a time of crisis. And as far as crime, very, very, very little crime. And forgive me for coming out there. I'm no friend to the open borders advocates. Much of that by illegals. Qualcomm Stadium, at one point at the height of this fire, 10,000 people, it was a city within a city, you know, braving the ash and the soot that was raining down like a light snowstorm, 10,000 people, all together, no crime. And the crime that was reported came at very late in this evacuation process. Eight illegals decided they would simply take water and food to the border to a fence to be resold. And someone, after the third trip, said, that just doesn't seem right. Police were called. They were turned over to Border Patrol. And we're working on a story where we believe four of the eight were released. I would like to know why. We're also finding bodies now. Bodies of those that perhaps trying to cross the border in a wildfire. Not the smartest thing. It just goes on and on. The size and scope of this is just phenomenal. But as far as the comparison to Katrina, there was no comparison because no one waited on the federal government to come get them. No one waited for the government to tell them what to do. No one waited for the city to say, all right, time to go. Yes, we have the reverse 911 call system. It's a very good system, and I'm glad we have it. But when people started to smell that familiar smell in California because the Sierra Club, the environmentalist wackos, no, please don't do that. Don't take out that piece of scrub brush. That's where the net catcher lives. No. Don't step over there. The Mesa Mint, it thrives there. No, I'm sorry, sir. You won't be able to build a fire break on your own property there because, you see, when it rains the one time a year and a vernal pool is formed, the fairy shrimp thrive. You know what a vernal pool is? It's a mud puddle. You used to play in them when you were children. And as a matter of fact, if you're a girl, you may have made a little pie. It's called a mud pie. That's what a vernal pool is. No, sir, I'm sorry, you won't be able to build a concrete fire break there. You'll just have to take your chances. I said all that to say this. Southern California people understand. They understand we're not only dealing with the forces of nature, we're dealing with the forces of whacked out liberals as well. So when they smelled the smell and they saw the glow, they went. They didn't wait. Who is it? It's the federal government here to save you. Oh, okay, let me throw a few things together. No, that's not what happened here, unlike Katrina. And I know I've heard people trying to defend Katrina all day long. I'm sorry, there is no defense. What was played out here is played out in the heartland of America every time there's a crisis, perhaps where you live. People don't wait on someone else to do things for them. They get up and they go and they do it themselves. And what I saw for 11 hours a day on the radio was absolutely phenomenal. 500,000 people evacuating themselves and their neighbors and their friends and someone's dog, and that's my cat, and who's that belong to? I don't know. Let's 2,500 horses evacuated in a matter of hours to the Del Mar racetrack. You people that know Southern California know where that is. People worried about how are they going to get fed? What will be done? Horses were fed. Horses were watered. Supplies were brought in. Nobody knows where that came from. They had the volunteers feeding and watering horses all the way up and down Del Mar. That's the American spirit. What was evidenced in New Orleans was a welfare state, the first affirmative action hurricane to create a natural disaster on American soil. It's not the same. I'm Rick Roberts. We're going to take your calls, 1-800-449-8255. We have a lot of information about the fires that in some cases are still raging in Southern California, the neighborhoods that have been burned out, the homes that have been lost, the some loss of life. We will take your calls as well, 1-800-449-8255. This is Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation. Thank you so much, Michael, for the opportunity to share with the rest of the country what is really going on in California. I know early on the fires, any number of names have been given to what has occurred here in the last week. Firestorm 2007, Katrina by fire. The fact of the matter is the people handled it, and they did so without depending on the government as they did it in Hurricane Katrina. And in the size of scope of this thing, it was huge. Initially, very early on, I started broadcasting about 5 a.m. on Monday morning. Nationally, all we were talking about, all we could see, all we could hear was Jane Seymour's out of her house and Malibu's on fire and this soap opera star's, you know, lost his garage. And I thought, well, excuse me, you know, from about Orange County south to the Mexican border is lit up like a Roman candle. Hello. And of course, very much like most of the national media does, as I call them, the lamestream media, they said, oh yeah, the largest evacuation in the state's history is taking place. Maybe we should give that some coverage. Well, you know what? The people involved didn't care. They took care of themselves. Nearly 700,000 people evacuated, nearly 500,000 acres burned, about the same square miles as New York and the surrounding burgs combined. And I got to tell you, this is a good day because we have turned. We have been able to turn the corner. And I want to take your calls, 1-800-449-8255, 1-800-449-8255. Peter, KNEW. Hi, Peter.
Hi there. I just wanted to present one simple question. Where was Sean Penn, John Travolta, Oprah Winfrey, and the other celebrities who are so interested in the Katrina hurricane? And I don't see them helping out here in San Diego. I'll wait for your response. Thank you.
All right, Peter. I appreciate it. Well, I'll tell you exactly where they are. They're nowhere to be found because what occurred in Southern California scares liberals to death. Now, I don't want to get off on a political rant, but that's the bottom line. They see a 500,000 people, 10 times more than evacuated in Hurricane Katrina. They see a 500,000 people plus evacuating themselves, thinking for themselves, helping each other, coordinating efforts, and doing it with without what? Without government intervention at just about every level. Now, I've got to give kudos to the San Diego City and the county. I mean, these people, they busted their backs because that's what they get paid to do, and they did it right. Did it perfect? Probably not, but they never will do it perfect. What scared these people to death, I don't know if you saw the national coverage with Arnold and Barbara Boxer and all the rest, Pelosi. What do? They spun this into, well, we would have had more equipment had we not been fighting the war in Iraq. First of all, that's an absolute 100% without condition. That's a lie. That's not true. She lied to the American people. And then some other knucklehead, well, you know, it's the global warming is why the state's on fire. That's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard. You combine the Santa Ana winds with this time of year and a point of ignition, you have a wildfire, period. The reason they don't want to acknowledge this, the Hollywood celebrities, the politicians, because it's an example of what people can do for themselves without the dependency on government. Neighbor helping neighbor, San Diegan helping San Diegan, people all up and down the coast. If a house was on fire, people would go up to total strangers' homes. Is anyone here? Does anyone need help? Back in the car and down the road they go. They didn't wait for the government. They didn't do anything except what they needed to do at the time. And that scares people that needs a constituency dependent upon them, scares them to death. Fort Wayne, Indiana, Jane. Jane, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to say congratulations and thank you to the people of Southern California for showing the rest of the nation exactly what it's supposed to be like here. I've never been more proud to be an American than to see people like you, but I do have a quick question. I have a nephew at Pendleton
right.
in the Marines. How did the fires affect Pendleton?
They did, but the Marines handled it just like they always do. Everything's good at Pendleton. Good to go. This is Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
That some of the National Guard equipment that should have been used to deal with this tragedy was not available because it was in Iraq or elsewhere. How serious of a problem is this?
Well, actually, I wasn't complaining. I was asking my colleagues from other states to really help us with assets because 50% of our equipment that the National Guard normally has is gone. It is in Iraq. I met with the National Guard. They've moved in various planes from other places, and we're very hopeful we'll have enough assets here.
All right. That first of all, this is Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation. Michael, thank you for the opportunity to set the record straight. First of all, that is an absolute lie. We have plenty of equipment, with or without Barbara Boxer or Nancy Pelosi. 42 choppers above the San Diego area alone. I've lost track of the C-130 slurry bombers. 10,000 firefighters on the fire line, along with inmates trained to do the job, and that's where they should be. We were sharing resources, and guess what, Pelosi? Guess what, Boxer? Guess what, Wolf Blitzer? We didn't need you, and we didn't need the government at any level. We will. FEMA, I ran into some FEMA people last night. They are here. They are not the first responders. We are the first responders. No talk of chocolate cities. No talk of Willy Wonka land. It was just that human spirit manifest in a time of crisis. And that gives me the will to go on another day. I mean, it truly, truly does. The numbers are staggering, and the politicians are just absolutely repulsive. Not only this, how many times have I... Well, you know, the global war... California wouldn't be on fire if it weren't for the global warming. Shut up! You're an idiot! You don't know what you're talking about! You know what a Santa Ana is? Well, yeah, that was that Mexican guy that... No, it's a weather condition. High, high, unpredictable, shifting winds with low humidity. Lots of dry fuel because the environmentalists won't let you clear it out. And you've got what? You've got a recipe for disaster every year in California. That's not true. That's not true. What Barbara Boxer said on national television, I'm sitting here. I'm in the middle of it. KFMB's my flagship. I'm here every day. I've been on the air for 10 and 11 hours straight since Monday. I'm telling you, what she's saying is not true. The American spirit put out those fires. Atlanta, Georgia, WSB, David. David, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi, David.
Hi. You know, to my knowledge, the fires aren't out yet, so I wouldn't keep my spirits too low or anything.
Do you know anything about the fires here, David? Would you like me to tell you what's been going on? Would you like me to tell you how many acres have burned and where the fire lines are now? I've got it all in front of me on my computers.
I've been keeping up with it all day long. The fires aren't out. They have stalled because the winds have died down, but that doesn't mean the fire is out.
David, you are an embarrassing idiot to anyone in California right now. You have absolutely no idea. I was in the middle of it, Einstein, and I can tell you for 10 and 11 hours at a time, I was giving evacuation reports so people could jump in their cars, get their dogs and cats, and get out. The fires have moved far to the northern San Diego County. They are in largely unpopulated rural areas, places where they can't be. Even if we had every truck on planet Earth, they wouldn't be of any use because they're in hills and mountains, and we're using aircraft and slurry bombers to deal with it. David, with all due respect, you have no clue what you're talking about. If you want to defend Pelosi and you want to defend Boxer and you want to defend the environmentalists, you need to find a different cause because this one just makes you look stupid. All right? And I'm sorry, when I look at the national television and I hear all of these politicians trying to make political hay out of something they know nothing about, it angers me. I have a vested interest. I'm sitting in the middle of it. When I walk outside just a moment ago to get some fresh air, the air I get is full of smoke. The soot covers the hood of my truck. I'll drive through it when I leave. That's the way it is. You don't know what you're talking about. Sorry. Wish you did. All right, 1-800-449-8255, 1-800, and you know what? I was bound to determine I would not make this a political issue because that fire didn't discriminate between a Republican's house or a Democrat's house or an Independent's house or a Conservative's house or a Liberal's house or a best of breed. It just took it out where it saw fit. And you know what? At that moment in time, like in the moments, the hours, the days, the weeks following 9/11, there were no Democrats or conservatives or Republicans and all that nonsense. There were Americans galvanized to help each other in a time of crisis. The same thing has existed here for the last 5 days. But just like clockwork, you start peeling the onion back, what happens? Well, you know, if we'd spent more money on the global warming issue, well, you know, if we weren't in Iraq, well, you know, I do know. And I know all of you trying to turn this into political agendas look like fools. 8:30 a.m., it's Ray in Los Angeles. Ray, welcome to the Savage Nation. Hi.
Yes, how are you? You know, all these environmentalists and these people, Nancy Pelosi, they don't know what they're talking about. I live here. I breathe the smoke every day now. But what it is, it's the environmentalists. You know, we pay the fire department to do the right things and to clear out the brush, have control burns, and these environments won't let them because of the smoke in the air. Well, look what happened to these poor people now because of the environmentalists. And these are the same environmentalists that are not letting us do offshore drilling. That now they're going to get us into more trouble. I mean, don't they see what people? Don't they see what's going on? It's the, you know.
First of all, I hear the frustration in your voice, the same frustration I feel in mine after about hour 8 or 9 on the air. I feel it, and I can empathize with you. I truly can. I'm going to ask Scotty. Scotty, just humor me here. For the sake of the listener in Atlanta, pull me up the latest fire line on the computer model, will you, and run it into me very quickly. Here's the bottom line. How about we wait? Is it possible that every soul that evacuated himself or herself with their belongings in the back of the car, is it possible we could just wait for a second or two, maybe let them get back in their homes, maybe sweep off the embers off the driveway? Would it be possible to do that before we start playing politics with this? Well, probably not, Rick. We've exploited the troops all this time. Why not the people in California? Well, I don't like it. I don't like the human spirit. I don't like the human spirit being downplayed by a bunch of hack politicians that are looking to make political hay out of the suffering of other people. I don't care if you're a Democrat. I don't care if you're conservative. It doesn't make any difference. If you need help, you need help. Let's just help each other. Get this thing back on track. You're talking about an area the size of all of New York and the surrounding burgs is now burned to the ground. People have lost homes their entire lives. My colleagues here at my flagship, they've lost everything. And what are they doing? They're out there right now, even as we speak, covering the fires, giving the information that need it to people that need it. Why? Because that's what Americans do, to help each other. And that's why the politicians are scared to death. Wait a minute, you mean they don't need me? They don't need me to come save them? No, we need you to do the jobs we pay you to do. I know, it's crazy like that. Biloxi, Mississippi, WBUV. Lori, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, kudos to those people in San Diego. They remind me of the people here in Mississippi who, after Katrina or during Katrina, didn't wait for the people, for the government to tell us when to evacuate, didn't wait for the FEMA trailers to show up later. In fact, they went out there the day after the storm, looked at their empty lot, and then went to their neighbor's house and helped start cleaning out. They're still, the state of Mississippi compared to 2 years ago has rebounded like crazy. New Orleans is still waiting for the handout, and that's the difference between the people who actually take care of what they've got to take care of and move on and the people who have to wait to be told what to do.
That's exactly right. That I can't add to this call, Lori. It's a great call. There's nothing I can say that is going to impact your statements. I mean, she's right. What else can I say? She's absolutely right. Look at Louisiana. Look at Mississippi. Now, the lamestream media will not tell you what was going on in Mississippi because they were attached at the hip at the welfare state. The first affirmative action crisis, the first affirmative action hurricane to hit American soil, that was the story. If it bleeds, it leads, man. Well, what's going on in Mississippi? They got hit just as hard. Yeah, but, they're kind of cleaning up themselves, and they helped themselves, and, the government didn't show up till later, but it didn't make any difference. And here's the story over here. It's a chocolate city. You take chocolate milk, white milk and chocolate. It's a delicious drink. You got some fool running the city, a corrupt government, in a welfare state where people are hanging out in the Ninth Ward. Hey, bring me another beer. Hey, I'm over here. There's a helicopter. No, give me another beer first. I'm sorry. That's the way it was. That's the way it was. I talked to a lady earlier today. Well, you can't compare. Those people in the Ninth Ward had nothing. And they had a week's notice. They had a week's notice. Well, they didn't have a car. Partner, I can walk a long way in a week. Don't tell me. It's about the spirit of the people. It's just like a work ethic or a moral consciousness. You either have it or you don't. A work ethic. I can bring somebody to work every single day, but man, if it's not in them, it's not going to happen. Or some type of moral balance. I mean, it's either in them or it's not. And the fact of the matter is, in the state of California, they did it right. They didn't wait on people to come get them. They didn't wait and cry and scream and wet their pants and, oh, somebody help us. They helped themselves because they didn't have a choice. It was that or die. And some of them have lost everything. And I take it very personal indeed, when I see politicians of every stripe, trying to make take some political advantage of the suffering of others. It's not right, and I don't think we ought to abide it. WIST, Bobby, in New Orleans. Bobby, hi.
Rick, you're exactly right on all of those people in the Ninth Ward were basically wards of the state. I was down here, and we got out of the cereal bowl. We headed north. Now, as soon as the storm passed through, we turned right back around, went down there with our pickup trucks and our boats, got in the water, and went down there and got those people out because we were doing what needed to be done immediately while our governor was
you know, playing the violin up in Baton Rouge, wondering, you know, exactly what was going on. But
Bobby, if I can jump in, Bobby, why didn't you wait for the city to tell you what to do? Why didn't you wait for some statement from the state of Louisiana? Why didn't you wait for President Bush to come before my fellow Americans? We need to, why didn't you wait? Why didn't you just sit there and sit on your hands and wait for somebody to tell you what to do? Why didn't you do that?
Because my dad, back in the 60s and 70s, was in charge of what was called the civil defense. And we went and helped all of the...
Wait a minute. I want you to say that again. Your dad was a part of what? It's a strange, strange thing from the archives of American history. What's it called, Bobby?
It was civil defense. And we went over after Hurricane Camille and helped Mississippi out and dug Mississippi out after Hurricane Camille. And then FEMA came along and nationalized it.
There you go. You want some great health care due to civil defense, what the government has done with FEMA. And I'm not, if you're here from FEMA, God bless you. Glad you're here. The fire started Sunday night. This is, let's see, I can read a calendar. This is Thursday. The first responders were the people that were affected. And you know what? They always will be. Unless, of course, you've got the kind of money, and maybe some of the folks in Malibu do, to have government officials camped out in the backyard or living above the garage. I don't know. But the bottom line is California should be proud. You people should be proud of what you've done. I'm proud, you know, because I watch this thing play out every single day. I've seen the heartache. I've seen the misery. I've seen the death. I've seen the people absolutely filled with pride to do what? Help a stranger. That's what. Now, there's going to be plenty of time for, well, we can do this better, we should have done that, and this and that. But you know what? The politicians, the liberal politicians, couldn't wait to get their teeth into this. As soon as a national camera, excuse me, is that a national camera over there? Why, yes, Miss Pelosi, it is. Hey, over here, Miss Pelosi. You know, we'd have a lot more trucks if we weren't in the war. Somebody should lock her in a closet until all the smoke clears. And I'm not kidding. They truly should. It's a slap in the face to everybody. Los Angeles, Mitch, thanks for waiting. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Hi, thanks, Rick. I grew up here. You know, Southern Californians are resilient. We deal with earthquakes and fires. We band together and help each other. The bottom line is we used to clear cut. That brush is a ton of fuel. Fighting it's not the answer. The answer is it has to be eradicated. Offer all the unemployed people and illegals $10 an hour. Get them up in the hills, pull the fuel out, and then use the fuel to power the power plants. We wouldn't need another drop of oil for 50 years or so much fuel. If you started at Santa Barbara and went to the Mexican border, you wouldn't need another drop of oil.
I mean, you know, that's a lot of people are laughing at Mitch. He's probably right. But the politicians would never, ever, ever go in that direction because they need you to need them. I'll say that again. The politicians need you to need them. And that's why they're playing this down. Save for a few national channels that can't ignore it. Qualcomm Stadium, it wasn't the Superdome. It was a city within a city. At the height, 10,000 people were there. Nobody got raped. Nobody got beat up. Nobody got shot. A lot of people met fellow San Diegans. A lot of people helped everybody. And when there was a problem, they took care of it. They called the cops. Cops came, turned them over to the Border Patrol, and they weren't even citizens. They were illegals stealing from the citizens of San Diego. Did the mob go after them? No, they probably had every right to emotionally, but they didn't. They went through the proper channels, and the guys were apprehended. San Diego should be proud. California should be proud. The lamestream media ought to look at themselves in the mirror and say, well, you know, the next time the entire state's on fire, maybe we ought to check a few cities other than Malibu. You know, Jane Seymour, I love her to death, but, oh, I walked out, there was smoke everywhere. It's in my nose. Well, that's great, but half of Southern California's on fire. Maybe we ought to point our cameras in that direction. San Diego, you did a great job. I'm Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Tonight, people are wondering if these fires are a result of global warming in some way, the climate change we've been seeing. The simple answer is no one really knows for sure. Some climatologists believe global changes are making firestorms like these more likely. We asked Anderson, to show us how.
Anderson, Anderson, do me a favor.
Say, while we can't blame one fire,
I can't do this. I thought I could listen to this. I can't listen to this. Anderson Cooper needs to buy a larger pair of those Vanderbilt jeans. He's all tight down there. Idiot. What a moronic thing to even go on. You've got people, you've got the largest evacuation in California history. The people did it themselves, so there's, you know, there's no chance at all to start bashing the government. So what do? Well, we'd have more trucks if they weren't in Iraq. Global warming, well, you know, the Republicans, global warming, we got that problem. This had nothing to do with global warming, fool. This had to do with Santa Anas and the enviro-wackos out there that won't let you clear a fire break. Instead, you look in the backyard, oh, there's the pool, there's the kid's swing set, there's the dog. Oh, he's a cute dog. Well, he's making a mess now. Then you look beyond the fence, and what do you see? Acres and acres and acres and acres, as far as you can see, of scrub brush, basically kindling for a campfire. But don't step over here. Don't walk over there. The gnat catcher's here. The Mesa Mint's there. The Enviro Freakos, I don't even know where they live in a cave someplace. And as soon as you go out with a weed eater and just barely nip, oh, my God, here they are, red lights flashing. It's amazing to me. The numbers are amazing to me. The resiliency, the human spirit always amazes me. Keith, WWTX, Waco, Texas. Keith, welcome. You're on the Savage Nation. Hi.
Yes. I think we really need to require the EPA and the environmental organizations to pay for the houses and the businesses that have been lost. They're the ones that have kept the people from taking out the undergrowth and such as that that has kindled this fire. And I saw a burn area in northern New Mexico back in the early 60s, so I know a lot of the devastating type looks there. I really sympathize with everybody's loss out there, and I rejoice in the spirit of the people.
Well, thank you for that, sir, and I mean that with all sincerity, and you're absolutely without qualification on point. You know, we went through this in San Diego in 03, 4 years ago, the Cedar Fire. Huge loss of life, a loss of property. We thought we would never see anything on that scale. 4 years later, this thing eclipsed it by a mile. Like I said, in Hurricane Katrina, we evacuated 50,000 people. Over a half a million people evacuated themselves in about 36 hours just in Orange County, south to the Mexican border. Not so much as a hangnail that has been reported thus far. Yes, there have been, I think, a total of 6 deaths. Four, we believe, are illegals that were trying to cross the border. And just if you are listening and you're an illegal, probably don't want to cross the border when it's on fire. Two were found in a home in Poway, which is a little suburb here, a very nice community of San Diego. Another and a few while being evacuated that were very advanced years. Look, here's the bottom line. When you're wanting to know what's going on, come to the Savage Nation. Listen to the people that are involved, that are on the ground. Don't listen to the national media. They're not telling you the truth. This is Rick Roberts on the Savage Nation.
Savage.